Radio Prague News.
Prime Minister Petr Nečas has sacked Agriculture Minister Ivan Fuksa over party infighting. The public's trust in President Václav Klaus has dropped, but he remains the country's most trusted politician. And Czechs have shown great interest in government bonds designed for individual investors. Prime Minister and Civic Democrat leader Petr Nečas on Tuesday sacked Agriculture Minister Ivan Fuksa from the same party. Mr. Fuksa, who was surprised at the news, told reporters the Prime Minister let him know the move was triggered by political reasons. Commentators believe his sacking is related to infighting within the Civic Democrat party. Prime Minister Nečas, however, later expressed long-term disappointment with Mr. Fuksa's performance at the Agriculture Ministry. Ivan Fuksa assumed office in July 2010 along with other ministers of the Czech centre-right government. He has come under criticism over a dubious logging tender. He also prominently appeared in a video clip sponsored by the ministry promoting Czech pork. After meeting with the Bulgarian Prime Minister Boyko Borisov in Prague on Tuesday, Czech Prime Minister Petr Nečas criticized those EU member states that prevent Bulgaria from entering the Schengen zone of free movement. Mr. Nečas said it was unfair not to let Bulgaria and Romania in the Schengen zone, in spite of the fact the two countries met all the requirements. The move was, however, opposed by Finland and the Netherlands. The public's trust in President Václav Klaus dropped by 11% since last month, suggests a new poll by the CVVM agency released on Tuesday. In spite of the decrease, President Klaus remains the country's most trusted politician, with 51% of approval rating. He is followed by Foreign Minister Karel Schwarzenberg with 41%, the Chief Justice of the Constitutional Court Pavel Rychetský with 40%, and the head of the opposition Social Democrats Bohuslav Sobotka with 36%. Czechs have shown great interest in the pilot emissions of government bonds designed for individual investors. Preliminary figures show that within the first 2 days the bonds went on sale, orders have been placed for bonds worth of 8.8 billion crowns of the total volume of 10 billion. Finance Minister Miroslav Kalousek said on Tuesday the interest exceeded his expectations and that he would up the volume of the bonds. Czech and foreign citizens can place orders for the bonds with the ČSOB, Česká spořitelna and Komerční banka banks. The bonds are available in maturity of 1 and 5 years with yields of 2% and over 3% respectively. The first figures show, however, that rather than households, the bonds sold well with investors and NGOs. The Czech government has earmarked 300 million crowns in incentives for foreign film productions in 2012. The Daily E15 reported on Tuesday, quoting an official from the country's culture ministry. Film producers will be able to apply for tax breaks covering up to 20% of their production costs. The incentives program for foreign film production in the Czech Republic was approved by the European Commission in June 2010. The country is one of 12 EU member states to qualify. Czech nuclear experts have been unable to determine the origin of a radioactive tube that was found last week at a playground in Prague, the Daily Lidové Noviny reported on Tuesday. Miroslav Hrehor from the Czech Nuclear Research Institute told the paper that the tiny metal rod, 2 centimeters by 2 millimeters in size, had no serial number or any other identifying features. The radioactive object was discovered last week at a playground in the Prague district of Podolí, buried just below the surface. A man came across increased radioactivity in the area thanks to his watch fitted with the Geiger counter. Experts said the tube, which was probably used in treating cancer in the 1950s, posed no serious threat. And finally, a brief look at the weather. The next few days will be mostly sunny with occasional morning fog. Daytime highs should range between 22 and 26 degrees Celsius. My name is Jan Richter and it's the end of the news.
This is Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio with me, Jan Wellinger. In today's program, a number of Roma activists have signaled their intention to found a new political party, but critics charge there's little chance it will ever get off the ground. Then, Return of the Blob debate unexpectedly reopens over an original architectural design by the late Jan Kaplický. And a little later in the program, stay tuned for another edition of Czech History. Reports surfaced on Tuesday that a number of representatives of the Czech Roma community are considering founding a new party focusing on Roma issues, including how to tackle long-standing social problems and ethnic tension between communities. Those have grown especially in North Bohemia in recent weeks. While some, like notable sociologist Ivan Gabal, have praised the project already, he told a national Czech newspaper such a party could, quote, change the atmosphere in Czech politics and improve the social climate, many others are skeptical, saying, like similar projects before it, this one, too, is unlikely to succeed. A little earlier, I spoke to Pavel Pečinka, the editor-in-chief of the Roma Issues magazine, Amaro Gendalos.
I have to say that in the past we've seen many similar attempts to found different Roma parties, and I'm afraid this project will end exactly the same. In some respects, it's better to do nothing than to make the same mistake again and again. Founding a political party is not easy. You have to take certain steps and follow certain procedures. The problem is that a lot of local Roma representatives, associations, NGOs and so on suffer from a similar problem. They are founded on familiar local grounds and operate in local conditions which do not translate well on a larger scale. Shared goals and aims often fall apart when funneled into larger projects of this kind.
Mr. Pečinka suggests that organizers connected with the Latin Memorial in Bohemia have not fully thought the project through, stressing that one of the major hurdles to such a party's success lies in the Roma community itself. For one, the voter base is small. It has been estimated that only around 193,000 Roma live in the Czech Republic, and of course not all can vote. Two is the problem of disinterest among Roma who are secluded on the periphery, facing far more acute problems daily than communal politics. Pavel Pečinka again.
The fact is that the potential voter base is separated from the elite, and there are certain cultural and educational differences. Also, half of the country's Roma now live in ghettos and have problems of their own. So there is no real way for them even to be reached by political parties. If I see hope anywhere, it is not in this project, but in individuals, young activists involved in NGOs or the media. I think they can make a difference.
The new political party it formed will be called ADAI, Czech daily Mladá fronta Dnes has written, noting the name means "we're here" in Romani, a response apparently to the fact that many in the community feel all too often they have been overlooked. In this light, Mladá fronta Dnes suggests that the move could be positive, that the party could have an impact not only on the communal level but even in parliament through cooperation with one of the major parties. But that continues to strike others as pure science fiction. Even if founded, many argue that internal divisions and strife in the new party will soon come to the fore, leading it to a similar end like other projects in the past. Now we turn to this story. The drawn-out debate over the construction of a futuristic building colloquially known as the Blob, originally meant to house the Czech National Library in Prague, has taken a new turn. Designed by the late Czech-born London-based architect Jan Kaplický, the huge green and purple structure divided public opinion when it won an international competition back in 2007, and the project was later scuppered. Now, more than 5 years after the original plan was put forward, Prague Mayor Bohuslav Svoboda has unexpectedly renewed the debate. Pavla Horáková reports.
The media spoke of a new architectural landmark of the Czech capital when Jan Kaplický's design was unanimously chosen by an international jury in March 2007. The avant-garde building of the Czech National Library overlooking the city was meant to welcome the first visitors in 2012. But in the meantime, the plan was rejected by the Prague authorities, and even President Václav Klaus voiced his objections to the design. After architect Jan Kaplický died in January 2009, thousands signed a petition to have his National Library building built. When Civic Democrat Prague Mayor Bohuslav Svoboda ran for office a year ago, he promised to renew talks on the issue. Now he has brought up the subject again.
We need to agree on whether we want it, whether we like it. If we, the citizens of Prague, decide that this type of art belongs here, then it will materialize.
Mayor Svoboda says Kaplický's design could be built on Prague's Letná plain, the original intended site. Instead of the National Library, it would be financed by the City Hall and private investors. And it would not house a library, but rather a concert hall or gallery. Eva Jiříčná, a Czech-born architect based in London, chaired the international jury that chose the winning design in 2007. She says this approach won't work. Ms. Jiříčná said it's like having a nice dog kennel and putting in goldfish, a parrot and an elephant. This sort of attitude to architecture is impossible, she said. Vlastimil Ježek was in charge of the National Library back in 2007 when the institution called a public tender for its new design.
Proposals to bring the blob back to life come from time to time, and I'm no longer able to make any sense of them.
Mayor Svoboda is not the first politician who has attempted to revive the debate. More than 2 years ago, the opposition Social Democrats said they would consider building Kaplický's blob if they won the next general election. Mr. Kaplický's widow, Eliška, who holds the copyright to the design, refuses to comment on the matter until a final decision by the City Hall is announced. Yet, a final verdict cannot be expected anytime soon, as, according to Mayor Svoboda, the debate has only just begun. In the meantime, the only blob the country has seen so far is a small-scale model of the original design built by a young student in Brno to serve as a bus stop.
Pavla Horáková reporting, and I have to say that small-scale design or rendition of the design as a bus stop strikes me as very bizarre indeed. Do you have an opinion about the original blob or how it ended up or over the hope that one day perhaps it will be built in the Czech capital? Well, if you do, please write to us here at Radio Prague. The address is english@radio.cz on the internet, of course, and you can also send us an old-fashioned letter, Vinohradská 12, 12099, Prague 2, the Czech Republic. That's our address. So let us know what you think, and some of your comments might even make it onto the air in our mailbox program. Now we turn to our major feature for this day, which is Czech history. It was first broadcast back in 2004, this edition, and it's hosted by Brian Kennedy.
Born in 1900, at the dawn of a new century and on the cusp of the commercial age of the automobile, Alžbeta Junková would grow up to become arguably the greatest female driver in motor racing history, and the most famous Czech driver to tackle the Grand Prix circuit of Europe. Eliška, as she liked to be called, was born in the Moravian town of Olomouc, in a sleepy corner of the Austro-Hungarian Empire. The daughter of a blacksmith and the sixth of eight children, though only four lived to reach adulthood. From an early age, the slight girl nicknamed Šmíšek, for her ever-present smile, dreamt of traveling the world. She loved to study foreign languages and by the age of 16 spoke fluent German and passable English, skills which helped her land a job in the Olomouc branch of a mortgage bank after high school. It was in that Olomouc bank that she met Vincenz Junek, an ambitious young man who had been discharged from the army after being shot in the hand, and was then charged with getting the branch up and running. Both of them headstrong, they initially gave each other a wide berth. But when Čenek moved to Brno to open yet another branch of the bank, he took his favorite employee, Eliška, along. In Brno, Eliška began formally studying foreign languages. Over the next 6 months, romance also began to blossom, and Eliška again followed Čenek when he was reassigned to Prague. There she sat for the state exams in English and also began studying French. But she decided to immerse herself in the language and went to France to work in a garden nursery, putting off Čenek's offers of marriage. Eliška also dreamt of world travel. Her plan was to see the deserts of North Africa and then head for Ceylon, today known as Sri Lanka. She made her way towards Gibraltar, but Spanish customs officers wouldn't let her embark for the Maghreb. She joined the kitchen staff of a British ship heading that way, but was denied a visa in London, and so returned to France. Čenek came to meet his beloved Eliška in Paris, but not under the Eiffel Tower or on the romantic banks of the River Seine. No, after a long separation, they met in an auto salon. Čenak had done well for himself during the early years of the Czechoslovak First Republic, and by 1921 he was sufficiently wealthy to indulge his passion for fast cars. Eliška Junková later recalled thinking, "If he is going to be the love of my life, then I better learn to love these damned engines." But before long, she too became smitten with the beauty of the racing cars on show, especially the Italian-made Bugattis. On returning to Prague, she took driving courses in secret and got her driver's license. Meanwhile, Čenak had started racing in earnest. In 1922, he won the Zbratslav-Jilovište race, now Europe's oldest uphill course, and finally married his Eliška. Before long, the Juneks began competing in local racing events as a husband and wife team. Because of his wartime injury, Čenak had trouble shifting gears, and so Eliška, then the riding mechanic, took over. They bought a state-of-the-art Mercedes, and in the autumn of 1922, an Italian-made Bugatti Type 30, a cigar-shaped racer which Čenak gave his wife after a tough win in 1923. It would become Eliška's trademark. Ettore Bugatti grew up in a household of artists surrounded by poets, painters, sculptors, and architects. He took the rich artistic heritage and melded it with his love for the automobile to create a legendary mark. At its peak, the Bugatti not only produced the most luxurious, sought-after, and therefore expensive cars on earth, but also a series of racers that defeated all comers. The Bugatti race cars were some of the most beautiful cars ever built, but suffered from inadequate brakes. After being criticized over the design of his brakes, Ettore Bugatti reportedly quipped, "I build my cars to go, not to stop." The flamboyant Italian became a lifelong friend to Eliška and mourned with her when she lost her husband. Eliška's first professional race was in 1923, still at Čenak's side. The following year, though, she took the wheel herself at the Lahotin Tremosna event in Czechoslovakia, and won in the category of touring cars. Overnight, she became a national celebrity. Eliška placed first in 1925 at Zbratslav-Jilovište. The Juneks bought a second Bugatti to celebrate, but also because that year riding mechanics were banned on the big-name European circuits, as they had been in America, and the couple had to race separately. By 1926, Eliška Junková was good enough to compete in races throughout Europe against the best male drivers of the age. The glamorous Juneks were often in the society pages of a young Czechoslovakia looking for national heroes. This 1926 magazine dispatch was typical of the adulation they received.
What a beautiful sporting couple, Junek and his wife, his dedicated and excited pupil in whose slim body is beating the heart of a brave man and whose childlike hands drive her car with unmistakable security and at great speed through tight curves.
Also in 1926, Eliška took second place at Klausenpass in Switzerland and was a remarkable success at the Targa Florio in Sicily, an exceptionally demanding course. She spent a month in Sicily before the event, carefully noting the 1,500 corners of the 67-mile-long course. The men there mocked her because the Targa was a race that required extraordinary stamina. Eliška was a gifted technical driver who used her memory more than her physical strength, and she was in fourth place until her steering failed and she crashed into a ditch along the rough and muddy course, only narrowly escaping a fall off a cliff, and she had won the respect of her competitors. Shortly after, she won in the 2-liter sports car class at Nürburgring, Germany, making her the first woman in history ever to have won a Grand Prix race. A tiny woman, a warm embrace by the husky overall winner of the event, the German Otto Merz, left her with 2 broken ribs. As her fame spread throughout Europe, Eliška anglicized her name to Elizabeth Junek. The racing press dubbed her the Queen of the Steering Wheel. With her sights on the 1928 Targa Florio, she bought a new Bugatti Type 35B, but finished fifth. In July that year, at the Grand Prix in Germany, though, she was sharing the driving with her husband. She had just changed places with Junek when he went off course and was killed instantly. Absolutely devastated, Alishka sold off their cars and gave up racing. She never competed at the Brno Grand Prix, the longest circuit used in Grand Prix racing in the 1930s, and the pride of the new Czechoslovak nation. Instead, Alishka returned to travel, her first love before Čenek and racing. She set out for Ceylon, and Eton Bugatti himself gave Alishka a flashy new touring car for the journey and hired her to seek out export opportunities to the subcontinent. Alishka did find love again and remarried shortly after the Second World War, but from 1948 to 1964, the communist authorities, disapproving of the high-flying bourgeois lifestyle that Elizabeth Junek had lived, refused to allow her to travel abroad. But the unflappable tiny woman lived well into her 90s, long enough for the Iron Curtain to fall and for the Queen of the Steering Wheel to regain pole position in automotive racing history as the first woman to win a Grand Prix event and the only Czech woman to do so. Of her accomplishments, she wrote in her memoirs,
"I proved that a woman can work her way up to the same level as the best of men. We women sometimes tend to blame our failures on nature. It is far more productive to be less angry and more hard-working. Some handicaps can easily be overcome."
Alishka Junková died peacefully in January 1994, but her spirit lives on in Czech composer Jaroslav Ježek's 1928 jazz classic, Bugatti Step.
And that blast from the past, Czech history from 2004, was brought to you by Brian Kennedy. That leads us to our final feature for this day, which is another edition of Soundcheck, in which you can learn Czech idioms through song lyrics. And this time it's hosted by Christian Falvey.
Když jsem tahal kačera, Ostrava byla lidu prázdná z večera.
Welcome to this soundcheck, starring the legendary Jaromír Nohavica. Regular listeners may be wondering why we so frequently use the songs of Nohavica. The answer is that not only does he write wonderfully entertaining songs, but they're chock full of homey idioms from the times when he was dragging a toy duck in Moravia, that is, when he was a young fellow in Ostrava. Have a listen to this song, Když jsem tahal kačera, when I used to drag the duck, or drake really, but why get technical?
Když jsem tahal kačera, Ostrava byla lidu prázdná z večera. Revěr večer všichni spali, bo se ráno stávalo, socialisticky se pracovalo.
When I was a kid, or used to drag a duck, Ostrava was deserted by the evening. Everyone was asleep by 9 o'clock because they would be up in the morning working socialistically. As far as dragging a duck or drake is concerned, my Czech colleagues have advised me it's not as random as it sounds. Just imagine a kid pulling a toy duck on a string. So if you're telling a younger person about something that happened when they were still a rugrat, an ankle biter, a stripling, you could say, To bylo když si ještě tahal kačera. That was back when you were still pulling the duck.
Ta byla na příděl, takový bordel, to jste nikdo neviděl. Papáši ve škodovkách a my zbylí v tramvaji.
Another seemingly nebulous way of referring to things that came before you would be to say, To si byl ještě na houbách. That was when you were still mushroom picking. It might not seem to make much sense, but leave it to mushroom-loving Czechs to find an analogy with mushroom picking in lots of phrases. To si byl ještě na houbách, however, refers to something that was before your time altogether, before you were born. And if you're sure you were never picking mushrooms, even metaphorically, you can say, To jsem byl ještě na malinách. That was before my time, or when I was still picking raspberries.
Když jsem tahal kačera, Kdo měl dlouhé vlasy, byl za frajera.
The naivete of young people then is the subject of an idiom or two, maybe most often with references to milk dribbling down someone's chin, mléko mu teče po bradě. One famous innocent is the puppet figure Hurvínek from a popular children's theater ensemble, whose simple-mindedness gave the phrase vidět něco jako Hurvínek válku, to look at something the way Hurvínek looks at a war.
Pálí být ve zdravém těle zdravý duch, chce to rocvičku a vzduch. Vstávat! Otvírá se okno! To je vzdoušek.
But now I'll leave you with more of Nohavica pulling the duck, back when Gagarin was flying around the world and they had to look at books about ancient Greece to see a naked woman.
Kulem země lítal Gagarin, byť se třískal na placaté kytary. Kdo chtěl vidět kousek nahé baby, musel do knížky staré řecké báje Eduarda Petišky. Když jsem tahal kačera, kdo měl dlouhé vlasy, byl za frajera. Tam, co je dneska stodolní, tam bydleli Romové. A co z toho všeho zbylo, pralinky rumové.
And that edition of Soundcheck was written and produced by Christian Falvey. That takes us to the end of today's program, though don't forget you can look up more news at our website, radio.cz, or you can also join in the discussion at Facebook, so do look us up. I'm Jan Wellinger. For myself and all my colleagues here at Radio Prague, thank you so much for joining us this day, and take care.